Hello? Okay. Now we have sound. The miracles of technology. Thank you for joining us here this afternoon. 3 years ago, world leaders recognized non-communicable diseases as a major threat to health. Cardiovascular disease, cancers, diabetes, chronic respiratory diseases claim an estimated 14 million lives a year. And today we're going to talk about some of the successes, some of the progress that has been made in fighting what has been called an evolving epidemic. I'm Jean Meserve. I'll be your moderator here today. Let me introduce to you the panel who will be with us here today. We are going to be hearing first from Dr. Margaret Chand, the Director General of the World Health Organization. We'll be hearing after that from representatives of six different countries who are involved in the fight against these NCDs. Dr. Utval Natsag is the Minister of Health for Mongolia. She joins us here today. We hope to have a representative from Nepal with us shortly. I think there's a little bit of traffic congestion. Not a surprise for New York City. Dr. Jaime Burrows is here. He is Subsecretary of Public Health in Chile. We have Dr. Khaled Al-Salawi, who is Undersecretary of the Ministry of Health in Kuwait. We have Professor Melvin Freeman. He is Chief Director of Non-Communicable Diseases in South Africa. And also, we have Dr. Johan Carlson. He is Director General of the Swedish Public Health Agency. So first and foremost, Dr. Chan.
This one?
There we go.
Great, thanks. Good afternoon to all of you, distinguished panelists, friends and colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Before I make my short comments, I'd like to recognize the co-facilitators, the ambassador from Jamaica and Belgium for helping us to get us to where we are. And I also want to recognize my two colleagues from the regional directors from the Americas region and also from the Middle East region who joined us. With my Assistant Director General, ADG, we want to pay tribute to all of you, the countries. First and foremost, for your commitment to this very important subject. I always say that what gets measured gets done. And this is the only way to make sure that things, the momentum, are being kept. As I said this morning at the opening of the 2014 NCD review, I want to pay tribute to all the countries for their, you know, determination and really started the 2011 political declaration. That was our watershed event. Many things, you know, many assignments you have given to WHO are being implemented with your support. Now, the political declaration was an important statement of global concern. Concern shared by heads of governments and heads of state, and also articulated their commitment and determination to take bold and urgent action. I underline the word urgent. What happens in countries matters most. We want to hear your experiences, especially from the panelists. Is the situation with NCD stable, getting worse, or getting better? If a country is making progress, others will benefit from knowing what works best in your country. Now that the international community recognizes that NCDs are a crisis, people want concrete guidance on the ways forward to deal with this crisis. In addition, of course, to sharing experiences, this panel will launch the WHO NCD country profile for the 2014. If you haven't got a copy, make sure you get a copy before you leave. And this is the latest, hottest report just produced by the organization with inputs from countries. Now, these profiles offer a succinct way to measure progress against the benchmark country profiles issued in 2011. Each profile sets out data on the proportion of the country's total deaths that are due to premature deaths from NCDs. The prevalence of risk factors and their trends are covered, together with an assessment of the country's capacity to address the related challenges. In this way, WHO aims to support a better policy match between priority problems and the many cost-effective interventions set out in the Global Action Plan for the Prevention and Control of NCDs. As I stated in my address to the May World Health Assembly this year, I'm deeply concerned about the prevalence of childhood obesity, which was also mentioned this morning by the President of the UN General Assembly. Our children are getting fatter in every region of the world. Ladies and gentlemen, obese children is a warning signal, that big trouble is on its way. An abundance of overweight children readily progresses to an abundance of chronically ill adults and a financial burden on the health systems that can be unbearable even in the richest countries in the world. When we begin to see declines in childhood obesity, we will know that we are tackling at least some major risk factors for these diseases at their roots. Full implementation, let me give just one example, of the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control will be an even bigger signal that we have begun to turn the tide. Let's work together towards that objective. And let me once again thank you and also thank the panelists, which, you know, I'm sure your experience will be very much value, and I will be listening very carefully. Thank you.
Dr. Chan, thank you. Dr. Udvall Natsag. Dr. Udvall Natsag, as I said, is here from Mongolia. Why don't you start us off and tell us what is happening in Mongolia?
Thank you. Good afternoon. I present here the countries from Wipro. Mongolia is a landlocked country with a small population, which is 2.9 million population. Almost total population is literated. We have well developed health infrastructure and health statistical system, even though the main causes of mortality and morbidity has been cancer, injuries, and cardiovascular disease. It's been increasing for the last years. We conducted step surveys three times in 2005, 2009, and 2013, but there is no tendency to decrease main five and six risk factors for common five NCDs. That's why we trying to implement the political declaration on prevention and control NCDs. For example, Mongolia has introduced whole government approach to struggle against common NCDs. Established National Committee on Health, headed by Prime Minister this year, the policy document on multi-sectoral partnerships for health is approved by the National Committee of Health. Local government has been initiated healthy movements everywhere. NGOs are actively involved. Private sectors involvement has been initiated. For example, salt content in the breeds has been decreased in some food factories. Also, we trying to implement some programs and projects to reduce some risk factors for common NCDs. For example, President of Mongolia initiated Alcohol-Free Mongolia Initiative in 2009. We revised the tobacco control law two years ago, also ratified protocol to eliminate illicit trade in tobacco products this year. Also, this year, we submitted the revised alcohol control law to the parliament. Nationwide health education campaign on common risk factors has been conducted. Also, nationwide physical activity movement also introduced it. It reduces salt content in bakeries in 2000. Also, it is in place. We have very good national policy and programs and system because we, since for the last 9 years, we implemented two national programs on NCDs. This year, the government was approved the second national program on NCD prevention and control. Also, clinical guidelines of common NCDs already developed and in place in the practice. Also, we have strengthened integrated management system NCDs in the health facilities. Also, early detection program of common NCDs, for example, liver cancer, breast cancer, cervical cancer, and hypertension and diabetes type 2 already introduced and has been implemented. Almost 100% of the population covered by the PHC or primary health care through family health practitioners or SOM health centers. Also, nationwide public awareness program campaign on health education for all common risk factors. Also, nationwide public awareness campaign on blood pressure control have been conducted. Also, we already mentioned the step survey has been conducted 3 times. Also conduct global school-based health survey was conducted 2 times in this country, in 2010 and 2013. Global youth tobacco survey also conducted 2 times. Survey on salt intake was conducted last year. We're trying to establish and set up very good monitoring and surveillance system for NCDs. Okay.
Great, Dr.
That's all.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Jaime Burrows of Chile.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I would like to make some remarks just as Dr. Margaret Chang said. We had a statement in 2011 to pushing us to take some measures to afford the non-communicable diseases, and Chile has been working on that area some years before that. And we started strongly affording this problem with the establishment of a regime of health care guarantees that afford these problems in order to give the health care and opportunity, time, and with the quality of care that is required. Even though, as everybody knows nowadays, this is not enough to afford this problem. So in the recent years, we had some policies that enlarge the view over these problems. We had, I would like to name 3 or 4 initiatives. One is a law prohibiting certain use of tobacco in common areas, and other restrictions of publicity. We had a law we call zero tolerance to alcohol that forbid the use of alcohol and driving a car. We had a law to change the labeling and advertising and in the foods. And recently, we had a program that is called Choose to Live Healthy. Of all these initiatives, I would like to tell you that some of them were very successful. the zero tolerance to alcohol was very successful in terms of reducing about 30% of the people dying in car accidents due to the consumption of alcohol. But in other areas, like tobacco consumption and our levels of obesity, we are not that successful. And we think now that we have to go further, and we think that it is not enough to appeal to the behaviors of people. We think that it is important to afford the social determinants of health. And in this area, we are trying to advance trying to provide a more healthy environment in the work, in the school, etc. We think that a way to advance in these areas is to establish explicit guarantees in terms of promotion and prevention, in the same way we did with the establishment of guarantees in healthcare. Thank you.
Dr. Burrows, thank you. Dr. Khaled Al-Salawi, Under Secretary of Minister of Health from Kuwait.
Good afternoon. First of all, let me thank the Chairman for the nice phrase you just mentioned, what can be measured can be done. I think that's a good idea, and stick to my mind, and thank you again. I'm one of the members of IMRO, and we are proud we have Dr. Alwan with us. He gives us our advice from time to time. Kuwait is a small country, it's 3.5 million. Everybody likes to live in Kuwait, especially we are Kuwait is a minority, and there's a lot of minorities with us, the Asian, the Arab leagues, and many other countries. We provide free health service, which costs the ministry a lot of money, billions and billions. We're building now 9 hospitals, and we spend a lot of money on medication and equipment. Health service is not that bad. We're seeing that in few monitors, like life expectancy, we reach up to 75, the mean, and infant death is also low in Kuwait compared to other countries. I'm not going to talk about Kuwait. I would like to talk in general what's the problem we're facing. Everybody is saying we reduced the salt. We already reduced the salt. We're already having a public campaign for mammogram for all the Kuwaitis in Kuwait. We already have taken care of smoke campaign. Alcohol is forbidden in Kuwait. It's all because we know the risk factor. We all have the same in common. What I'm going to talk about 3-4 points, you know, which we are facing, why we are a little bit delay, and we aiming for improvement of or getting rid of this epidemic which suffer all life. First of all, I think we don't know everything regarding the experience of other country. I'm sure there are other country, you know, because this is a new field for our member in IMRO. We'd like to know what's the experience of other country, how they solve the problem, because it's not the problem is not only for the health officers. It's a problem of a multi-sectorial area, like Ministry of Education, Ministry of Business, Finance, is all should ha- they have sh- put their, you know, input in our efforts. I can see also there is no conference or meetings in the world regarding this epidemic. I mean, everybody talking about Corona, and there's a lot of things regarding Corona, and there's nothing, and there's about 200 or 250 deaths of Corona. Regarding this epidemic, there are millions and millions die every day. We don't have these meetings and conference. Also, one of the problems we're facing in Kuwait, and I think in other country, we're not sitting with the, I mean, as a minister of health, we don't sitting with other ministers, as I said. I mean, if I want to raise the taxes, I have to go through many, many processes. I have to take the things to the parliament to take a law. Of course, I have to go also to the Ministry of Finance, to the cabin or Ministry of, Prime Minister to discuss this problem with his members. So, I mean, we should change this idea. We should sit together all these members with the Ministry of Health to solve the problem. We can see. If we want to target the problem, we go to the mother before she having the kids, because back home, a lot of mothers, and they like the child who is fat, because this is reflecting that he has a heavy child, healthy child. So we have to insert in her mind, this is bad. And the child can learn to hate the sweet, because every time we give him some dates, some chocolates, we are proud to give him some of these sweets because we want him to see him eating. This is wrong. We have to change the idea, attitude of the family regarding the salt, not adding salt, not giving the kids sweet. Also, health education, unfortunately, it's caused little money in our budget. We don't have really, you know, we have to spend a lot of money on health education. If you can see, maybe, and I'm talking about my country, maybe less than 1% or less than 1%, I'm saying, it all goes to health education. Even the doctors, the nurses, back home, the idea of any patient goes to the doctor or the nurses, taking drugs, medication, if I have asthma, I should, hypertension, give me the pills, I go home. The doctor actually don't spend time, and the nurse don't spend time with the patient, discuss with him how to deal with these problems. Stop smoking and reduce weight, exercise. Unfortunately, the doctor want to get finished without education. Lastly, we should target the school as well, because the programs should be changed. That's in a brief. I'm not going to leave my other things for my colleagues. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Professor Melvin Freeman is here from South Africa.
Thank you very much, DG Excellencies. I don't know that there's any country in the world that says we've got enough resources for what we want to do, but it's particularly true in low and middle income countries. And the issue really then becomes one of balancing. How do we balance between prevention and promotion on the one side and curative care and treatment on the other? How do we balance between, in our situation, what goes into HIV, AIDS, TB, maternal and child health, where we're doing pretty well but needs more resources, against NCDs? How do we balance between what goes into the health budget and what goes into the social determinants budgets that actually contribute in the end to healthy people? So I think the issue of how one gets these balances right is critically important, and one has to try and use evidence-based methodology and cost-effectiveness methodology wherever you can. And I think that some of the things that we have been doing in South Africa are based on that kind of thinking. Some perhaps we're waiting for more research, which is going to give us more direction. But maybe let me tell you a couple of things that we have managed to do in the last while. We do have a strategic plan with 10 particular targets. I have to say that South Africa jumped the gun a little bit and didn't wait for the WHO targets to come out. And so we set targets for 2020, perhaps stupidly, and unreachably, but they are fairly similar in what we want to do to what eventually the WHO actually recommended for countries. But we're feeling the pressure because we still have to do it by 2020, even if the targets for the WHO are a little bit later than that. But some of the things that we have been doing are, for example, we have introduced regulations on trans fats in foods. We have introduced regulations on salt in food. I think that, as far as I know, we're the first country to have actually identified a whole range of products with targets around how much salt is allowed. And we've given two target dates whereby people, or industry rather, can gradually reduce the amount of salt. And we are complementing this with a major education campaign involving radio, TV, and so on, to try and ensure that we don't reduce the salt in food and people make up for it by putting on the table or into the food they eat. We have gone fairly far with the Framework Convention on Tobacco. I was hearing just before I got onto the stage here that we need to go a little bit further, and I agree. But we are not doing too badly in that respect. We have recently introduced the HPV vaccine, and this year we vaccinated about 330,000 young girls with the first dose of the vaccine. This is without Gavi support, and we managed to get money for this because we think it is critically important. We do have draft regulations on essentially banning all advertising and sponsorships of alcohol products. This has been approved by the Cabinet to go to Parliament, and so expect this to happen soon. We have draft regulations around labelling, which take us a lot further than we are at the moment. And we have been engaging with the industry and with NGOs around dealing with issues of obesity and foodstuffs and so on. Those are all the things on the preventive side, but we haven't neglected the curative and control side. And here, I think, is a good example of where we've tried to use an existing situation and cost-effectively piggyback onto what is a good program. We have got the biggest HIV rollout program, ART rollout program, in the world. And it has been supported by groups like PEPFAR and other development organizations, so that we actually have a pretty good rollout program. And in the end, HIV is a chronic disease, as is diabetes, hypertension, asthma, mental health, and so on. And what we have done in various districts now is combine these programs. So if you have a chronic disease, you will go and line up with everybody else who has a chronic disease and get your medicines and the interventions in exactly the same way. We are also now moving towards packaged medicines and so on, where people don't have to come into the clinic and clog up the clinics, so that people can go to pharmacies or other places. And that can include any chronic disease. And sometimes people have HIV and diabetes, or HIV and hypertension, and it's really silly that they should be going to different lines on different days for siloed care. So this is an important move forward that I think that we've made, and we think that it's a cost-effective one which is going to improve the quality for all people with chronic diseases. We call this the integrated chronic disease model. We also have a school health service, which we are now rolling out in quite large numbers, and NCDs are part of that agenda as well. We also, though, are worried about our surveillance side of things. We're not quite as bad as is reflected in this book here. For some reason, we didn't send all the information that was required, but we do admit that our surveillance lacks rigor, and that is something that we are currently working on. Again, we have excellent examples within the HIV and TB fields, and how do we actually start towards integrating that and collecting all the information together remains a challenge to us, not just to us within the health department, but to our development partners as well, because they are very set on funding certain things. There has been some shift towards health system strengthening, and we appreciate that, and that allows us to move forward. I can see I've probably just gone over my time. I had a couple of more things to say, but perhaps in the discussion.
We'll get them in there, Professor Freeman, I'm sure. Dr. Johan Carlson of Sweden.
Thank you. Madam Deputy General, Excellency, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very pleased to have been invited to give some remarks on behalf of a small European country close to the North Pole, which has another quite different situation. We've had a favorable situation when it comes to communicable disease for many years, meaning that 90 to 95% of mortality in the country is due to NCDs. So we've been working with this for many, many years. And one could really wonder is there anything new for us in this concept? What could we learn from this? And I'll come back to it. There are quite a few things that we could learn from the whole process. We've been working with NCDs for some years, of course, and we have some programs in place. We have a rather cohesive strategy for alcohol, narcotic drugs, doping, and tobacco. We have guidelines for methods of preventing diseases across the healthcare system. And we also have a rather new strategy to prevent and treat chronic diseases, as well as HPV vaccination and universal health coverage. And we should be in a good situation. And in fact, we are, to a certain extent. If you look at the figures here, the latest figures, we see that the age standardized death rates are going down. The premature mortality due to NCDs are going down as well. We're seeing a longer life expectancy in all groups, but, and I'll come back to it, there are still a lot of problems. We haven't been able to solve the equity problem. The differences between socioeconomic groups, and especially when it comes to education, are still there. They've been the same for 25, 30 years, and they are even increasing to some extent, which, of course, is problematic to us. And we're also seeing some positive signs, of course, that the latest figures when it comes to children obesity is that it's going down, it's declining, especially in the cities. And we also have been rather successful when it comes to reducing tobacco smoking. The figures here says 25, 24. It's probably a typo. We are down to 11% of the population, women and men, are smokers, which is good news, of course. But the thing that I reflected on today, Dr. Chan said, is that we haven't been able to engage the society outside the healthcare sector very much, the civil society and other areas of politics. And that's a lesson we need to learn. And I think that's where we also need the support of the WHO, not only to support and encourage the health sector, but also set targets, come back with figures to enable us to show to the other areas of politics that they need to get engaged in this. We have a big potential. We are in a rather good shape, but we still have a lot of problems. We don't really use the potential of the population so far. Thank you.
Great. Dr. Carlson, thanks so much. We would love to take your questions and answers, their answers, your questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand, identify yourself, and keep your hand in the air for just a moment so the technicians have an opportunity to turn on the microphone at the place where you're seated. I have lots of questions, if nobody here has one right off the bat. I see no hands up right now, so I'll start out. Professor Freeman, we heard you talk about balance and how it's difficult to balance non-communicable diseases against HIV, of prevention versus treatment. I'm curious to know whether anybody on this panel thinks that the balance is right now when it comes to NCDs. Any thoughts? Dr. Carlson.
No, I don't think the balance is right. On the contrary, but if you promise not to quote me, I would
no
say that
no promise made.
we probably have got enough resources in our country for doing almost enough resources, but it's a matter of balance. I mean, rich countries, wealthy countries have resources, but we need to balance them correctly, and we balance them in favor of treatment rather than prevention, and that's our big problem.
And what's the obstacle to getting the balance right? Is it that you don't have that wider societal involvement and awareness of the problem that you mentioned?
I think an obstacle is the conception that treatment is our first goal. The demand from the population is to get treated. When you talk about diabetes, the politicians and people talk about we need more clinics, we need more drugs, we need more. Very little is said about the prevention. We need courageous politicians saying we need to change this balance. And we it's still a bit to come, really.
Yes, Professor Freeman, since you raised this point.
I've never come across anybody in the health field who doesn't say prioritization is a good thing to do. And that, I suppose, does raise issues of balance. Because, for example, at the moment we have the Millennium Development Goals, and they prioritized certain health issues that needed particular attention at that time. And now, as we move to the post-2015 development agenda, we again need to look at our prioritization process. And I think that, again, there are few people, and certainly not my country, that wouldn't argue for NCDs and universal health coverage as being a critical area that has to be part of these post-2015 development agenda. But you can't do everything all at the same time. And I think that that's also part of the balance. Is how do we actually identify and on what basis? If also you just take something like mortality rather than burden of disease, you're going to balance in a particular way. And I have some problems with seeing the preference given to mortality. And, for example, in the Brazzaville Declaration on NCDs, it was the very reason why we included things like mental health and sickle cell disease and so on and so on, because of their high morbidity. So when one looks at the balance and prioritization, you also have to have scientific means on which to do that. And I don't know that we always get it right, but we try.
Dr. Slawi.
I believe also, I mean, the balance is not right, simply because the effect of infectious disease is sudden. The problem with the NCD is a chronic process. The people get scared of AIDS, scared of Ebola, scared of TB, but they didn't realize the effect of the chronic disease. That's one, number one. Number two, there is certain disease may affect certain population or certain communities or certain countries. It does affect, it has little impact in certain area, like AIDS, maybe is you find it high in Africa, high in the States or in other country, but is low in our country. Maybe is underestimated or could be because the protective sex in our countries it should be during the marriage, through the marriage. But the NCDs are all the world. It's common. You find it in state, in Africa, in Asia, everywhere. So, but the money we put in these NCDs is little monies. It's not like the companies which create the vaccine, which have put a lot of money on it.
NCDs get what proportion of the World Health aid budget, something less than 2%, I understand. Dr. Chan, is what would you like to see in terms of dollar figure for NCDs? Is there a huge gap?
It's not working. Anyways, I think I can speak loud enough.
There we go.
Certainly, we need more resources. For the NCD programs in countries, there's no two ways about it. This morning, you heard the president's address. Out of the big sums for ODA for health, less than 2%. Less than 2% were on NCD. Now, is 4% better than 2 or what? There's no two ways about it. We need more money. But we do need political leadership at the country level. You talk about the importance of health prevention. You need to move to what I call multi-sectoral upstream prevention. If you get, you know, immunization properly done for hepatitis B, for HPV, you can prevent cancer. If indeed in South Africa you integrate the program, you know, HIV, TB, and NCD, instead of managing different programs in a silos, you save money, you can do a lot more. And much more can be done with very little resources. Tobacco control is the most cost-effective intervention. And some of you mentioned about alcohol control in your country. And of course, when I visit Mongolia, your president is pushing for a framework convention on tobacco, on alcohol control. I did say that it is the determination of the countries. There are multiple instruments that we can use, even at the country level. Legislation are extremely important for tobacco control, for, you know, some of you mentioned about putting a tax on some of the unhealthy junk food, and this has been done in quite a number of countries that I have visited. So you have multiple mechanisms to do prevention. Friends, colleagues, if we don't do prevention, meaning turning off the tap, there is no money in any country that can address it by treatment alone. However, I do encourage early diagnosis. Why? We need to learn the lessons from HIV. Early diagnosis, early treatment can be secondary prevention to prevent heart attack, to prevent kidney failure, blindness from diabetes, and to prevent, you know, amputation and so on and so forth. So we need to take the whole continuum of health promotion, prevention, early treatment and diagnosis, and then so that we can, you know, make sure that people have long life expectancy, but healthy life expectancy. If you have a long life expectancy and that you are having all this morbidity, all the diseases, you don't have well-being, you don't have happiness. So if we can take that comprehensive approach, whole of government approach, this morning I did say that if the different ministries are not working in a coherent manner, why am I having ministers of health signing up to framework convention on tobacco control and yet having minister of trade suing some countries for taking very good tobacco control? This is what I call policy incoherence in countries. It is actually quite embarrassing. Let me remind you, don't do that. Sorry, I'm very passionate.
We can tell. Dr. Burrows was laughing knowingly. Did you want to chime in on that?
Oh, I was laughing there because there are other words to, for that less polite. But I would like to say that just to tell that we are now doing a tax reform, discussing the Congress, in our Congress, and this tax reform is intended to leveling the burden of taxes between the people. But several of the reforms introduced in this tax reform are intended to both to attack the problem, these problems of tobacco consumption, leveling up the taxes to the tobacco. We are increasing the levels of tax of alcohol. We are introducing tax specifically to sugar in the drinks, and we are doing more of taxes to the use of some petrol and diesel.
Is there unity in the government? Within the government for taking all these measures?
Yes.
Or is this the kind of disconnect
This is a work between the health ministry and the money, the treasury of our country, and we are taking this together, and we are discussing it in the same way. And I think this is possible to to make this a success for the country.
We do have a question from the audience. If you could keep your hand up until the microphone comes on. Right over here.
There we go. Yep, thank you. David Patterson.
If you could identify yourself.
Yes, David Patterson from the International Development Law Organization. My question to the panel concerns the experience we can learn from the HIV response in mobilizing for prevention and care in the context of NCDs. And I'm referring to the engagement of a broad cross-section of civil society organizations in the response. I note that in HIV debates in the UN, we have this chamber up the back full of civil society organizations, and I'm so sad that today we don't have such a large cross-section of civil society here. I'm referring to civil and political rights in the response to NCDs around freedom of speech and freedom of association. We have huge business interests mobilized against us. For example, in one Asian country, a tobacco control bill was amended after it left the parliament and before it was signed into law by the president. Politicians need the political will to make hard legislative choices, and that requires strong civil society support. How important for you are human rights in the response to NCDs?
Does somebody want to field that one?
Please press the microphone to the right, the button to the right.
Are you speaking to me?
Who? Wow. A voice from on high here.
A voice from above. Well, a voice from above.
We're in awe.
Thank you.
There he is.
As I was saying, you know, your question is absolutely correct. And in fact, there's no lack of civil society organization, including UN, talked to the president, wrote to the president. But the political pressure is so high from the tobacco industry lobby, and this is a challenge. Now, but then I'd like to come back to your point you make about you're happy to see a lot of civil society for HIV, but not so many. But NCD comparison with HIV is still, 10 years late. So I am quite confident over time the movement by the civil society in NCD will be bigger because not a single person in this room does not have either a family member, a friend, a relative that are heavily affected by NCD. And that touches your heart. How many of you can continue to support treatment for cancer, which costs $100,000 per person per year? I mean, many people, many countries will be impoverished if we don't attack this problem. So I do support the comments that we need a social movement so that the whole of society, or the families, the individuals, putting pressure at the right point, you know, for the right actor to do the right thing.
Any other comment from the panel on this? Yes.
I totally agree, Madam Chair, but to some extent it's more problematic because when it comes to pressure on certain areas, it's usually pressure more treatment, more medical care. The political pressure is, the first pressure will be there. Only afterwards people are discussing what should we do to stop this epidemic. And to it could also be counterproductive to a certain extent when it comes to heart disease, for example. Diabetes is a good example. It's easier with tobacco and things. People know what it comes from. But a lot of other things, it's not so easy, really. So it's... You can't really compare it with the HIV situation.
I believe we had another question right back there in the gray suit. And identify yourself again.
Have I pressed the right button?
We got it.
Yes, I think
we
so.
Got it.
I'm Anders Nordström, Ambassador for Global Health from Sweden. I think what Margaret Chan said here, that we have not just an opportunity, but we have a task here really now to focus on the preventive side. And from my perspective, it does not need to cost money. The reducing levels of salt, of sugar, fat, etc., does not cost money. Contrary, we can save money by doing that now and also for the future in terms of treatment cost for the future. But the issue we have, and I'm going to come to my question, which is more around how do we as traditional health people engage and how do we ensure different kinds of accountability framework of working here. But just one comment on the civil society and the cost is that we have a lot of civil society organizations engaged. If I see Sweden, we have both on the treatment side and on the risk factor side, but they are not part of what I can call the development community. And I was this morning, we were talking about the financing, and I think we need here to think differently than what we have done in terms of HIV/AIDS. Those are diseases, global challenges that affects the whole world in a totally different way. Engage the private sector in a totally different way. So don't think development in the classical way that that is going to finance this. I think we need a different way of thinking here. But my question and comments or sort of issue here is more around accountability, because we recognize and we agree that we need actions beyond the health sector. And the question is what we can do as health people. Me as an ambassador for global health, Margaret, you as DG for WHO. We need to get actions then from agriculture, from energy, from infrastructure. And can we define now how we can, as actors, also actually being held account to ensure that they are taking the action that they need to do? Reducing road accidents should in some way be your responsibility in some way as Minister of Health. This is an issue that we have been sort of stepping around a bit. And I think HIV/AIDS has led the way here to say that you need a whole of government, as the DG was saying, approach here. But we need to think a little bit more sophisticated around accountability, because you can't just say that that is somebody else's responsibility. I think we also have health actors has a responsibility to ensure that action is taken so that we get maximum health out of our investments in infrastructure, in food, in energy, in education. And the question is how we define that and how we equip Minister of Health, ambassadors, DGs, etc., that are health people, but not health sector people, to ensure that we get maximum health out of whole society approach to health. And I think that accountability issue is something that we should spend a bit more time on to define what that is so that we can help people.
Does anyone want to take a stab at that accountability issue? Chime in.
Well, accountability is exactly important if we believe what gets measured gets done. And accountability must start at the country level. Most important is national accountability. And I'm happy to see more active parliamentarian engagement, because at the country level, the parliamentarian can hold governments to account for whether they are doing the right thing. If they have a plan, they have the targets, are they delivering? And of course, in addition to the parliamentarian, we know that in most countries, if not in all, you do have your own audit committee. Is the audit committee exercising their executive function? And then, most important, if not, is the civil society. When the government promulgate their plan, their targets, and then put money, are they putting money where their mouth is? And then are the international community who are supporting the country, you know, supporting country ownership and country leadership and fall in line with the country plan, instead of having parallel systems to bypass the country? And these are real issues that we need to discuss, and I fully agree with Anders. Let's get down to the brass tacks, the nuts and bolts. How can we hold every country to account? Governments like to be held to account, provided they are done fairly.
Yeah. Professor Freeman, you wanted to jump in too?
As long as they're done fairly. I think that that's a difficult and complex issue, because who needs to be accountable to whom? For example, in South Africa, there's quite a strong organization that is wanting to hold government accountable for doing more transplants and more dialysis.
No.
So we say no. Okay.
No.
On what basis do we say no? If you are saying we should be accountable to civil society, they are a civil society organization. Why should we be accountable to the NCD Alliance but not to the Transplant and Dialysis Alliance? Who says we should be accountable to whom? And I think that it does become a complex issue, because civil society have their own interests and reasons why they say we should be doing certain things.
I want to support what you're saying.
Thank you.
Does civil society also need to understand? Why am I saying the parliamentarians are important? That is the In a political system, presidents or prime ministers are elected on their mandate, and they need to come up with specific actions and to say that how am I going to fulfill my political manifestation. Now, the political parties in the country, through dialogue, through debate, disagreement, and finally on agreeing, what are the priorities? For example, in the case of South Africa, for the Minister of Health, how much resources are we giving to you? With that resources, either from your own domestic or partners' resources, what results are you delivering? This is what I meant, accountability to the parliamentarian. Now, the civil society, like the industry, the private sector industry, will lobby political parties, and in some cases, they pay them. Let's be honest. The government must have the political resolve to make the right priority under very difficult political environment. And once that is agreed by the parliamentarians, the different committee, health committee, social committee, must hold the government to account to the plan that they agree and with the funding they are given to deliver results. That's what I meant. But in a political environment, civil society, industry, academic, everybody will lobby their hobby horses. This is nothing new. I'm just being very frank with you. I know I'm not, New York is not a familiar platform for me. In WHO, we talk like this all the time. So
it's refreshing.
For those of you, who are not used to this kind of a discussion, please excuse me. I'm just being honest, okay?
We had another question back here. Again, keep your hand and the microphones on and tell us who you are. Go for it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to ask the question. Last night here in at the UN, we started our first informal final review of the proposed sustainable development goals towards the post-2015 development agenda. We reviewed goal number 2 and number 3, and number 3 was health. So in the area of health, the issue of NCD was prominent. For the means of implementation to address non-communicable disease, the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control was identified as a means of implementation. 5 countries took the floor to oppose this Framework Convention and wanted it deleted. Only 1 country supported it. My question to the panel is that all of those 5 countries are countries who have ratified the Convention on Tobacco Control. Where is the disconnect between the capital and the negotiators over here? Because when they ratified the convention, my understanding is that they agreed that this is the means of implementation to address this whole issue of a non-communicable disease. It's the only public health treaty that the WHO has invoked its power to do. So my question to the panel is, where is the disconnect and how do we ratify it so that it doesn't happen? Because there is definitely a need to in this particular issue. Thank you very much.
Anybody want to handle that one? Any comments? Dr. Chan, are we going to turn to you here?
Job. Thank you, Ambassador, for raising this question. This is exactly what I said, policy incoherence. And we have seen examples in Geneva where the ministers of health, of course, when they negotiate the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, multi-ministerial delegation came to WHO to agree on the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And yet, Australia, Norway, Uruguay, these are countries who implement very good public health measures in keeping with the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And yet, some of these countries, who their Minister of Trade, take, you know, the countries who are taking all these good measures to WTO, some to the World Bank, some to the through bilateral legal system. So you are right. Where is the disconnect? I think the government has to answer that question. The government concerned have to answer that question. My sense is that policy incoherence will undermine the influence and the credibility of a national authority. And this is an issue not to take, to be taken lightly. Yes, every country has disagreement on different issues among the ministries, but the governments, once they sign up to an international treaty, they have to honor that. If not, it is not easy. You give space for other entities, including UN and WHO, to be confused by you. I mean, this is a very serious problem. Thank you.
Do we have a question over here? I see a light on. Do you have a question for us? Yes.
Ambassador from Jamaica.
Thank you. I wanted to pick up on something that, and I have to apologize for not getting the doctor's last name, but the panelist from Kuwait mentioned something with respect to learned behavior and the example that he used regarding, you know, using sweetie, candy, chocolate with our children sometimes as a reward for good behavior, as inducements, incentives, which I think is very important because we hear a lot on the prevention side about the fact that it's just so frustrating dealing with this disease because there are, you know, modifiable risk factors. It doesn't need to happen this way. But my concern is that some of these learned behaviors are almost, you know, just deeply rooted into the cultures of our societies. I was just looking at, and I have to thank Dr. Chan and her colleagues for putting this out. I was just looking at the page on Jamaica, my own country, and it tells me what we know anecdotally already, which is that in terms of obesity, or men have obesity rates, well, this is 2008, so it was measured in 2008 as 9.7%, which pales in comparison to what we're seeing in terms of our women. Same environment, but the women are 37.5%. You know, and you hear, and this is anecdotally, I don't know, you know, whether it's data-driven, but we who live in the Jamaican society know that Jamaican men like their women big, and so the women are encouraged to be like that. And I'm hearing stories that in some societies, before a woman gets married, they almost cloister her away and fatten her up for her wedding day. Now, the question I have to the panel is, in the face of these cultural practices, I mean, it's easy to say, okay, you just start at the family level and you don't do this with your children, but it's more complex than that. What are the approaches? What are the successful approaches to actually getting some traction with respect to altering deep-rooted cultural behaviors? Because it would seem to me that this is not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a lot of effort over a long period of time. So I would, you know, like to hear some comments on this issue. Thank you.
Dr. Carlson, did you want to take that one?
Yes, I think one shouldn't get stuck with this idea that things are so deeply rooted and that it's a backbone in the culture and so on. So because when we look at risk factors, almost all risk factors, whatever it is, could be obesity, could be tobacco, could be whatever, we see the social gradient. We see that people with knowledge are picking up better behavior than people without knowledge. And I would doubt that the people without knowledge are more rooted culturally. So it's very much a matter of the right to get the knowledge, the right to know. And I think it's the responsibility of society to let people know, to involve them in better health practices, rather than think it's a matter of culture.
Dr. Salawi, did you want to weigh in since you raised this very complex issue?
Well, I think the tobacco issue and alcohol issue and all this issue of NCD, my belief is the only way to control it is by education, health education. even the conflicts between the big companies, which may, as Chairman said, that there is some time give money for the MB or the government. People who knows the effect of these problem, the issue of these problems, like alcohol, smoking, smoking can lead to death, to cancer, to COPD. Alcohol can lead to cancer of liver, cancer, I mean, many, many things. If people move, they will control, you know, the decision of the government and the company. So we have to put a lot of money in health education. A lot of money in health education.
And you think that that education can change the cultural
exactly.
norms?
It will take time. I'm talking not about 5 years, 10 years. I'm talking about, a new generation. A new generation, 50, 60, 70 years. But we need to put a lot of pressure on health education.
Do we have that long, Dr. Chan?
We have no choice not to take action. And if you look at 60 to 80% of mortality in countries are due to these diseases, and yet on the other hand, countries are talking about sustainability, sustainable development. You need healthy, educated human capital to maintain productivity, to improve productivity, to carry on the development of the countries. So I fully agree that cultural practices can be, you know, take a long time to change, but social gradient, it is very clear that the poorest of the poor have no access to education, no access to information to stay healthy. If you choose anything that is very important is education. Education of girls especially, empower women, give them a chance to take care of themselves, and then to take care of the family, and all these will change. And men can help, and you are very powerful. Next time your son is going to get married a girl, they say that don't encourage them to get fed before you marry her. I mean, we need a social movement. That's why the civil society is so important. I mean, you know, to take the country's interests at heart and rise above our individual likes and dislikes. What is the priorities of a country going forward? To change the practice, the cultural practice, to pay more attention to prevention. And I think this can be done because there's no other option.
We have time for just two more questions. One light on here, and then we'll come over here for one of these. You go ahead right now, and please ID yourself. Do they see you? Yes, you're on.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Lodge Naidu. I'm president of the International Narcotics Control Board. I've actually crossed the divide because I come from healthcare, and I'm also working in the drug regime, and I see so many problems that you're going to be having. You spoke about honoring conventions. You're going to have challenges because we're having challenges now. You know, you spoke about issues of cultural issues and cultural issues not being able to change. We have challenges now. There's a major drug debate on the issue of revisiting legislation around cannabis. As you try to tighten up salt and sugar and tobacco, others are dismantling cannabis. So we need to start looking at what has been the experience in the people working in the drug field. I think one of the sorry issues is the issue of addiction itself. It's got a large body of knowledge, but has not been formalized into a profession. And when you look at NCDs, a lot of people are thinking about medical diseases rather than thinking about health. And what we moved in the drug field is we look at the issue of resilient families. And rather working with resilient families and strong fathers actually works very well into developing families that make proper decisions. Now, the message "don't do drugs" is too simplistic in the drug field. So we go beyond that and we look at early childhood development. We're looking at first 7 years. If there's problems there, there's high steroid levels. You've got diabetes, dementia, etc., etc. later on. The powerful issue is the medical doctor, and I think someone mentioned it earlier. A little package of tools and brief intervention to be given to medical doctors. This is what we do in the drug field. And the medical doctor saying, don't smoke, is a very powerful sentence. They don't say it enough. They don't even say, don't do drugs. They don't say, don't drink, unless he's not drinking himself. So I think it's really very important that we need to talk a little closer from NCDs and the drug areas and to look at how we can share a lot of this information.
Why don't we get the panel to respond to that?
Okay, I'll stop at that moment. Thank you.
If I understood your question or your statement is that we should involve doctors more, and I agree, but we shouldn't rely on the health care system, on treatment to deal with the whole preventive issue or the whole issue of health, because it's rather too late. If I'm walking into a doctor's office at the age of 45 with all my bad habits and all my heart diseases and high blood pressure, it's too late.
But what if you're walking into your pediatrician's office at the age of 7 and the doctor says, don't do these things?
Probably not for treatment, rather for maternal health care, child health care, using the school as an arena for prevention, rather than going to the treatment of the healthcare system. We should use the knowledge of physicians, but to move it over to other parts of society, other parts of the healthcare system, rather than in the treatment situation.
From what Dr. Chan has said, it sounds like you need to do it on all fronts, not just one front, but many fronts. Correct?
Can you raise an extremely important point?
Microphone.
So critical, not properly, getting the attention and resources. Why do I say that? Early child development, if we do it right, you get the nutrition right. You will reduce the risk of having diabetes and others. And also the drug issues that you are talking about and many other things. You know, we need to go back to basics. One of the reasons why I'm setting up a Ending Childhood Obesity Commission is the science is very clear now. We need to look at the genetic, epigenetic, and the contextual factor. How can we produce, raise healthy children? And that is the critical point we need to go back to and re-examine.
We had a question over here, yes, in the gray suit. Is the mic on?
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to talk about the issue, the whole of government approach. And a few weeks ago, we were very fortunate, Dr. Chan, you came to visit Dublin, Ireland, at one of our meetings of the Healthy Ireland Council. And what this is a cross-government approach to the issue of health. And it's really one of the key things for us is that the Prime Minister of Ireland is very much behind it. And it brings together all government departments. And it means we now actually have a forum where we can debate health issues. I mean, so that's why we're able to take... measures like on, for example, standardized packaging for tobacco. The first country in the world, I suppose, to ban tobacco in the workplace. Sugar-sweetened drinks tax, which is an initiative which is ongoing at the moment. Banning smoking in cars and all of that. But I think the important thing is to have that forum available with that cross-departmental political support. I mean, because if you don't have that, it's very, very difficult to get success, particularly with ministries for finance. I mean, we know that. And just if anybody's interested, and I'm sorry I don't have material with me, but if you wanted to just look it up on our Department of Health's website, you'll see in our Department of Health there is a section particularly that will be directed right to Healthy Ireland, and it might be of interest to some people here. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your comment. Did anyone want to chime in? Of how to do it properly?
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Carlson, yeah.
Yes, I think it's an extremely good example, John, but I still hope for the help of Dr. Chan and the WHO to get to this point in all member states by the right messages, the right indicators, the right feedback, to really make governments understand that this is health in all policies is really what we need.
Is there any consensus as we wrap up here on how to take what has been learned so far about what works and how to move this forward, how to accelerate the change
Does anybody want to take a stab at that as we close out this afternoon? Professor Freeman?
I do think that WHO have an important role to play here in collecting the information around best practice and which countries have done what. I know that when I go to my minister and I say, well, we'd like to do this and that, he'd say, who else has done it and what has the success been? So I think that if that information was available to us on, let's say, 10 key priority areas and we could identify them, I think it would really help us.
Thanks. Any other thoughts? Dr. Chan.
Committed, fully committed. You know, many colleagues from the organization is here to hear you and also to hear other platforms' discussion. We will take it forward, and we are absolutely behind you. Remember, you always have a good friend in WHO.
Of course. Thank you all for joining us here today. Thank you to all of our panelists, Dr. Carlson, Professor Freeman, Dr. Chan, of course, Dr. Natzak, Dr. Salawi, and Dr. Burroughs. Thank you all. Appreciate it.